No, I mean from before. It took me nearly 5 seconds to understand what she meant. That person is dead. Savardin suddenly, convulsively, stood and walked out the inner door and, by the sound of it, through the outer as well. Striegan watched her go, gave a quick breathy hmm, and then turned back to me. Your sense of who you are has a neurological basis. One small change and you don't believe you exist anymore, but you're still there. I think you're still there. Why the bizarre desire to kill Anander Mianai? Why else would you be so angry with him? She tilted her head to indicate the exit. Savardin outside in the cold with only one coat. He'll take the crawler, I warned. The girl and her mother had taken the flyer and left the crawler outside Striegan's house. No, he won't. I disabled it. I gestured my approval, and Striegan continued, returning to her previous subject. And the music. I don't suppose you were a singer, not with a voice like yours, but you must have been a musician before, or loved music. I considered making the bitter laugh Striegan's guess called for. No, I said instead, not actually. But you are a corpse soldier, I'm right about that. I didn't answer. You escaped somehow, or... Are you from his ship? Captain Savardin's? Sword of Nathtas was destroyed. I had been there, been nearby, relatively speaking, seen it happen nearly enough. And that was 1,000 years ago. Striegan looked toward the door, back at me. Then she frowned. No, I think you're gownish. And they were only annexed a few centuries ago, weren't they? I shouldn't have forgotten that. It's why you're passing as someone from the Gerentate, isn't it? No, you escaped somehow. I can bring you back. I'm sure I can. You can kill me, you mean. You can destroy my sense of self and replace it with one you approve of. Striegan didn't like hearing that, I could see. The outer door opened, and then Savardin came shivering through the inner. Put on your outer coat next time, I told her. Fuck off! She grabbed a blanket off her pallet and wrapped it around her shoulders and stood, still shivering. Very unbecoming language, citizen, I said. For a moment she looked as though she might lose her temper. Then she seemed to remember what might happen if she did. Fuck. She sat on the nearest bench heavily. Off. Why didn't you leave him where you found him? Asked Striegan. I wish I knew. It was another puzzle for her, but not one I had made deliberately. I didn't know myself. Didn't know why I cared if Savardin froze to death in the storm-swept snow. Didn't know why I had brought her with me. Didn't know why I cared if she took someone else's crawler and fled, or walked off into the green-stained frozen waste and died. And why are you so angry with him? That I knew. And truth to tell, it wasn't entirely fair to Savardin that I was angry. Still, the facts remained what they were, and my anger as well. Why do you want to kill Anander Mianai? Savardin's head turned slightly, her attention hooked by the familiar name. It's personal. Personal. Striegan's tone was incredulous. Yes. You're not a person anymore. You've said as much to me. You're equipment, an appendage to a ship's AI. I said nothing and waited for her to consider her own words. Is there a ship that's lost its mind? Recently, I mean? Insane Rajshai ships were a staple of melodrama, inside and outside Rajshai space. Though Rajshai entertainments in that direction were usually historicals. When Anander Mianai had taken control of the core of Rajsh space, some few ships had destroyed themselves upon the death or captivity of their captains. And rumor said some others still wandered space in the 3,000 years since, half mad, despairing. None I know of. She very likely followed news from the Roch. It was a matter of her own safety, considering what I was sure she was hiding, and what the consequences would be for her if Anander me and I ever discovered that. She had, potentially, all the information she needed to identify me. But after half a minute, she gestured doubtfully, disappointed. "You won't just tell me?" I smiled, calm and pleasant. "What fun would that be?" She laughed, seemingly truly amused at my answer, which I thought a hopeful sign.
"So when are you leaving?"
"When you give me the gun."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
A lie. Manifestly a lie. "Your apartment on Drasania Station, it's untouched. Just as you left it, so far as I could tell." Every one of Stregan's motions became deliberate, just slightly slowed. Blinks, breaths. The hand carefully brushing dust from her coat sleeve.
"That a fact?"
"It cost me a great deal to get in."
"Where did a corpse soldier get all that money, anyway?"
Stregan asked, still tense, still concealing it, but genuinely curious, always that.
"Work," I said. "Lucrative work."
"And dangerous. I had risked my life to get that money."
"The icon?"
"Not unrelated, but I didn't want to talk about that."
"What do I need to do to convince you? Is the money insufficient?"
I had more elsewhere, but saying so would be foolish.
"What did you see in my apartment?" Stregan asked, curiosity and anger in her voice.
"A puzzle, with pieces missing." I had deduced the existence and nature of those pieces correctly. I must have, because here I was, and here was Aerolesperus Stregan. Stregan laughed again.
"Like you.
Listen." She leaned forward, hands on her thighs.
"You can't kill Anander me and I. I wish to all that's good it were possible, but it's not. Even if I had what you think I have, you couldn't do it. You told me that 25 of these guns were insufficient."
24, I corrected. She waved that away.
"Were insufficient to keep the Rodchai away from Garsed. Why do you think one would be anything more than a minor irritant?"
She knew better or she wouldn't have run. Wouldn't have asked the local toughs to take care of me before I got to her.
"And why are you so determined to do such a ridiculous thing? Everyone outside the Roch hates Anander me and I. If by some miracle he died, the celebrations would last 100 years. But it won't happen. It certainly won't happen because of one idiot with a gun. I'm sure you know that. You probably know it far better than I could."
"True."
"Then why?"
"Information is power. Information is security. Plans made with imperfect information are fatally flawed, will fail or succeed on the toss of a coin. I had known when I first knew I would have to find Stregan and obtain the gun from her, that this would be such a moment. If I answered Stregan's question, if I answered it fully, as she would certainly demand, I would be giving her something she could use against me. A weapon. She would almost certainly hurt herself in the process, but that wasn't always much of a deterrent, I knew. Sometimes, I began and then corrected myself. Quite frequently, someone will learn a little bit about Rodchai religion and ask, if everything that happens is the will of Ahmat, if nothing can happen that isn't already designed by God, why bother to do anything?
Good question.
Not particularly.
No, why bother then?
I am, I said,
as Anandar Mianai made me. Anandar Mianai is as she was made. We will both of us do the things we are made to do, the things that are before us to do. I doubt very much that Anandar Mianai made you so that you would kill him. Any reply would reveal more than I wished at that moment. And I, continued Striegen, after a second and a half of silence, am made to demand answers. It's just God's will. She made a gesture with her left hand. Not my problem. You admit you have the gun. I admit nothing. I was left with blind chance, a step into unguessable dark, waiting to live or die on the results of the toss, not knowing what the chances were of any result. My only other choice would be to give up. And how could I give up now? After so long, after so much. And I had risked as much or more before now and gotten this far. She had to have the gun, had to. But how could I make her give it to me? What would make her choose to give it to me? Tell me, Striegen said, watching me intently, no doubt seeing my frustration and doubt through her medical implants, fluctuations of my blood pressure and temperature and respiration. Tell me why. I closed my eyes, felt the disorientation of not being able to see through other eyes that I knew I had once had. Opened them again, took a breath to begin, and told her. Chapter 10. I had thought that perhaps the morning's temple attendants would, quite understandably, choose to stay home. But one small flower bearer, awake before the adults in her household, arrived with a handful of pink-petaled weeds and stopped at the edge of the house, startled to see Anandar Mianai kneeling in front of our small icon of Amat. Lieutenant On was dressing on the upper floor. I can't serve today, she said to me, her voice impassive as her emotions weren't. The morning was already warm and she was sweating. You didn't touch any of the bodies, I said as I adjusted her jacket collar, sure of the fact. It was the wrong thing to say. Four of my segments, two on the northern edge of the Four Temple and two standing waist-deep in the lukewarm water and mud, lifted the body of Gentah's niece onto the ledge and carried her to the medic's house. On the ground floor of Lieutenant On's house, I said to the frightened, frozen flower-bearer, It's all right. There was no sign of the water-bearer, and I was ineligible. You'll have to at least bring the water, Lieutenant, I said above to Lieutenant On. The flower-bearer is here, but the water-bearer isn't. For a few moments, Lieutenant On said nothing while I finished wiping her face. Right, she said, and went downstairs and filled the bowl and brought it to the flower-bearer where she stood next to me, still frightened, clutching her handful of pink petals. Lieutenant On held the water out to her, and she set the flowers down and washed her hands. But before she could pick the flowers up again, Anandar Mianai turned to look at her, and the child started back and grabbed my gloved hand with her bare one. "You'll have to wash your hands again, citizen," I whispered, and with a bit more encouragement she did so, and picked up the flowers again and performed her part of the morning's ritual correctly, if nervously. No one else came. I wasn't surprised. The medic, speaking to herself and not to me, though I stood 3 meters away from her, said, Throat cut, obviously, but she was also poisoned. And then, with disgust and contempt, A child of their own house. These people aren't civilized.
Our one small attendant left, a gift from the Lord of the Roch clutched in one hand. A pin in the shape of a four-petaled flower, each petal holding an enameled image of one of the four emanations.